with our peer. So I can't tell you how excited I am to have this latest inductee in the Hall of Fame sitting directly across from us. First of all, congratulations, Andrew. You put so eloquently what it meant to you from the minute you opened that Tony Peak letter, and it really touched everybody. It was a fantastic speech.
It's quite amazing. It's a very humbling experience, and one that as a young kid or starting the game, I never ever thought you'd get the opportunity to be part of the Hall of Fame. And I'm quite honoured, and to be inducted with the guys in that room is pretty special. And I was freaking out anyway when I walked in the room, and you see some of the guys walking around. You see Lee Matthews and Craig Bradley and Dipper, and so, and it's just like, wow, how unbelievable is this? And I was just so humbled to be able to be a part of it, and it's a very special night.
I love that story you told about getting the letter and finding out you were being inducted. And kind of, does the AFL write to you? How frequently would the AFL write to you? You wouldn't get Tony Peake's signature on a letter too often, would you?
No, I'll get a lot of letters from the AFL at the start of the year, in regards to tickets and different things being in the 300 club, and some of the being part of the past players and so forth. So you get a lot of letters, and this one really was quite different when I saw it, and I was like, man, no way does Tony Peake send me letters. So it was quite freaking, and straight away it sort of tweaked in my head that been out of the game for a few years now, and why would Tony Peake be writing me a letter? And I really freaked out, and I guess I was lucky to have my wife in the car at the time and asked her to open it.
It's 97-98. We were talking with Cooter about how quickly time goes. It's like 15-16 years ago, those back-to-back flags. Now, I've often thought that those premierships get undersold a bit. There's a bit of a view that Adelaide got lucky at the right time of the year, but even in the both grand finals, they were such phenomenal wins. You were down in both at half time. You hung in there, and you had a lot to do with that, the fact that both times the side was still in contention. What was it? You mentioned Malcolm Blight, and obviously he was a very special figure in your career. What was it about him as a finals coach that enabled you guys to sort of hold your nerve when, as an underdog in both games, I think a lot of people might have expected once you went behind, that could have been it. But you were able to hang in there and then run over the top of two really good sides, which in both cases had finished on top of the ladder those years.
Yeah, we, as a coach, he instilled a lot of confidence in us as players, and more so belief about what we were doing. We prided ourselves on the way we trained, and we trained one of the hardest training teams, and we knew that we could always back our fitness in, and it's just a matter of a lot of things being put into place and to be able to for us to be able to compete against the best sides. And his ability, he'd been there, he'd done that before, and he knows what it takes to win grand finals, and him to be able to pass that on. He was a great, he's a great teacher of the game. He inspires you to play. He makes you want to play for him. And for him to be able to, and you're right, I think that they do get probably undersold a bit, those grand finals. And you look back at it, and the Kangaroos, I think, were probably one of the best sides over that decade. Mm. And to be able to beat them was pretty special. And they missed a lot of shots and kept us in the game until halftime. But footy's about taking your chances and putting scoreboard pressure on. And we were able to do that. Even though we came from fifth that year in 98, it was
after pretty, losing a final.
We got smashed by Melbourne out in the G, and had to do it tough. We had to go. I think we had to go to Perth, and then we had to go over to we had to go to Sydney to play as well. So it was quite tough, but we had belief that if we could, if we could bring our A game, we could compete with the best sides. We had a really terrible day against Melbourne in 98, but we had some real belief because of what we'd been able to do in 97 as well, and things went well for us. We beat Sydney in the wet up there, got across the line, and then, you know, we'd had the doggies measure for a bit, and after that 97 win where we beat them by a point, you know, we just had a lot of confidence, and we came out and we played really well, and you know, we beat them quite convincingly. And going in the grand final, like I said, to be able to play against one of the best sides of that era, and you know, probably one of the greatest players in Wayne Carey as well, you know, to be able to do it against someone of his caliber and what he brought to AFL football at the time was quite special.
Andrew, it could have been so different though. You might have been playing your trade with Clive Waterhouse and Matthew Burton and Luke Toyer and other start-up players for the Fremantle Dockers. Famously, Fremantle Dockers got a little bit blindsided by Adelaide. How did it all play out? And were you prepared and preparing to become a Fremantle Docker?
Oh, initially I was, yeah. I was picked up as part of that pre-concessions that they had, and I went over there with the view that I was going to become a Fremantle Docker, and it just didn't work out for whatever reason. You know, at the time they had a lot of talented young Aboriginal players on their list, and Jared Neesham, you know, he said that to me, and he didn't really know a lot about me. And in fairness to Jared, I wasn't, you know, I wasn't that player at the time either. You know, I turned into that player over a long period of time, and it wasn't that I didn't rock up there as a 17-year-old and I was like, here I am, I'm Andrew McLeod. And but you know, but looking back on it, for me, you know, it's probably the best thing that ever happened in my football career. I went back to Adelaide, and you know, played in a fantastic era for the club. You know, obviously playing in the two flags, but yeah, I don't reflect back on what could have happened if I was at Fremantle at all. It was about opportunity, and opportunity came to live in Adelaide, and I was very lucky.
And you didn't get Mick Molloy or Vince Colosimo doing your two screen piece tonight. You had Jared Petrenko, and there's a legacy there, not only with the number 23, but being an Indigenous footballer, you hold a very special place for all other Indigenous footballers that come behind you, and even those that came before you, to be in the Hall of Fame. What's special about being an Indigenous footballer in the Hall of Fame, and how much it means? You spoke about being part of the Armat family, and of course we know that name through other footballers. It's a legacy that lives on and on and on because of the tightness of your community.
Oh yeah, look, it does, and I'm very proud and I'm very humble that I can be a positive role model in the Indigenous community. But you know, to be able to be inducted into the Hall of Fame is quite special, and you know, it's regardless of culture and who you are, it's a fantastic you know, it's a humbling and fantastic honour to be able to be there. And you know, I do take it very serious, the fact that you know, I am a role model for a lot of the young Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander kids around, and you know, if they can aspire to be like myself, and you know, I'm proud of that. And you know, it was, I think Jared summed it up quite eloquently in his you know, in his introduction speech about that, and you know, that in itself was quite emotional.
It's been such an amazing era for Indigenous players, and you know, yourself, Adam Goods, Michael O'Loughlin, all played over 300 games. It's a hard one to answer, but do you think, had football been, say in Victoria, been as accepting of Indigenous talent 50 years ago as it is now, would we have seen 300 game players back then?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, it's one of those things, and some blokes just never had the opportunity, and you know, that's just not just Indigenous players. You know, I don't think you know, it's just one of those things that back then it probably wasn't. You know, it just because those opportunities weren't there, people would often, it was easy for people just to be able to go and play in the bush, or you know, just to go and play in the local competition without putting themselves out there. And it's not for everyone. Look, you know, they might have had trades and got money, you know, better money playing amateur footy, and that was just the case. Yeah, but who knows? And you know, in today's game, very very fortunate. You've got some great role models, and you look at some of the guys that are running around, and you talk about you know, Goodsy now, paving the way and doing some great stuff. And some other guys around, Sean Burgoyne, you know, he's just played 250 games as well. So some exceptional talent heading around it. You know, hopefully that over the, you know, the next 5 or 10 years that you'll see a lot more of the Indigenous boys playing 300-plus games.
Andrew McLeod, you're a champion footballer, the Hall of Fame, and you, a perfect marriage. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
Congratulations.